Welcome to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast with Darren Mitchell. If you're a sales leader looking to take your leadership to a whole new level, then this is the podcast for you. We'll be exploring tips, techniques, and strategies to help you take your leadership to the exceptional level and allow you to enjoy more money, more meaning, and better sales results. Welcome back to the Exceptional Sales Leader Podcast. This episode is the back end of the first week in April, and it's my absolute pleasure to welcome to the show Mandy Ellison, all the way from St. George, the St. George area, Utah, United States. How are you, Mandy?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, Darren.
It's late Thursday afternoon where you are, and I love talking. Isn't technology fantastic where you can talk to a person on the other side of the world and it feels and looks as if we're just in the same room?
I know it. I just had a conversation with my sister-in-law from Australia too.
Okay.
And just like hours ago. So it is magical how you could just communicate as if they are next door. It's amazing.
It is. Technology. So now this couldn't have happened probably 10 years ago with a lot of the technology, particularly internet connectivity, but it removes all the excuses now because it's really, really crisp video and hopefully the sound is fantastic. Hey, looking forward to this conversation, Mandy. You are the, I'll dare say, founder of Hands Off CEO.
Yes.
Nice. You've got a very interesting and highly successful background, which we're going to delve into and talk a little bit about some of the key concepts around Hands Off CEO. You're also a podcaster as well, with the name of the podcast being the Hands Off CEO podcast. So we'll put all that information in the show notes for listeners to delve into. Before we jump into, I guess, the topics of today, for the listeners' benefit, I'd love to get a little bit of background on you and what led you specifically to the work you do now in terms of how did the Hands Off CEO come about?
Yeah, so how the Hands Off CEO came about was very much an accident. I accidentally started this consulting company off the back of an agency that was crippling under the weight of me going and having a maternity leave. I was weeks away from having, really days away from my second baby being born. And my business just like, I was trying to wrap things up to take maternity leave because my team was just not like, we're not going to be able to handle things without me. And it was just, I had to pretty much shut the business down because I needed to be able to take some time off. And all the stress that was leading up to this, like my body was shutting down. Like this is just days before I'm about to give birth to my second daughter. I've got a 4-year-old around, like needing my help. And I just got so burnt out with all of the workload, and you know, the team that I needed to really be there was not. They just like they flaked on me, and I learned the importance of how bad it can be if your team is not so people that you can really count on, and if you don't have a business structured in a way that gives you the freedom, which is the reason that I started this company. And it was very challenging for me because I had been a manager in another company where I had gotten that whole company, the little small company at the time, to run completely without me as the manager. And in an industry that it was pretty much impossible to do that in real estate management at the time. So I had done it successfully before and I didn't know how to do this with my own company. So anyway, I shut the business down while I was in my paternity leave, really pretty frustrated about the whole situation. And so I started going out and searching for solutions to this problem that I had. And so I started interviewing people. And then while I was interviewing them, I knew that if I could solve their problem, that I would find out the solution to mine, because I'm a good problem solver. And I knew that I could solve that. And if I did it enough times, I'd figure out the solution to my own problem.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, I had people saying, hey, I want to pay you to help me with this. And I'm like, okay. I realized that this was where my true passion was. And I just followed that. And it has become the Hands Off CEO as it is known today. And that was 11 years ago, 12 years ago.
And I know that you've done a lot of work with CEOs, millionaire exits, and being a sort of a business advisor for that. So, was that the exploration phase that you went through post your second child, that
Yes,
led to the
yeah,
CEO?
definitely after that. I built up to that, right? And now we have a whole consulting company with multiple advisors, but it was just the stepping stones as you're growing and growing your impact and what you can do, right?
Absolutely. Now, I imagine going through that, having the pressure of a 4-year-old about to give birth to your second child, running a business, and then thinking, oh my God, my business is literally wholly and solely reliant upon me. There would have been a lot of pressures, but a lot of challenges that you're experiencing at that time. Looking back now, though, how do you look at that time in your career and your life, in terms of, is it something you reflect on and say, I'm so glad that happened, or you know what, that was a really shitty time in my life and I wish it didn't happen, but either way it did. But what was the key learnings and the key lessons from that?
The key learnings was that my company wasn't generating enough value to be able to charge the price points to be able to replace myself and key parts of it with people who were really good and could do good work. So it all came down to the level of value that we were able to provide within the company. And so that was one key piece. And that right there is been the key piece that I mean, I'm glad I went through that experience. It's helped me be able to help hundreds of other people in similar circumstances, and not just those similar circumstances, but also ones where they've painted themselves into a corner. They've become successful to a certain point, but they can't get any further without working more and more hours. So, I'm really glad that I went through that. But I ultimately learned some very important skills that have led to some of the systems that we now teach around how to be able to restructure your offers in such a way where clients will literally pay three times the amount for about the same work. And, and imagine if it's about the same work and you're charging, let's say if it's even 100% more, which is like, this is not an outlier. These are not outliers I'm talking about at all. When you're doing that, now you have it literally can increase your profit margins 500%. So now when you're looking at that, now you can actually afford really good quality people. So it eliminates a lot of those operational problems that was keeping you stuck in there initially.
There's so much to delve into with this, because I'm hearing, you know, I mean, I can charge multiples of what I'm charging today without necessarily, I guess, and correct me if I'm wrong, differentiating too much from the service that is readily available in the marketplace, but also creating a good environment and high quality people. So there might be people listening to this right now, whether they are a founder, whether in a small business, whether in a corporate. And they have responsibility either as a sales leader or a chief revenue officer, who in their mind may believe that they are pivotal to the success of the team and therefore the business. How much of the work that you've done, and I guess the discovery process you've gone through, has realized that, you know what, you get the business to a certain growth phase, but you then eventually become the bottleneck for the future growth. And how can either founders, CEOs, senior executives, sales leaders, respectfully remove themselves from the picture, or at least look for opportunities to leverage what they've got that enables them to continue to grow? Because it's fair to say that most, if not all, businesses exist to grow, right? And if you ask the vast majority of businesses, what's your plans for the next 12, 24 months? It's to grow my business. It's to grow my revenue, to grow my profitability. So, what are some key thoughts around that?
Well, and I like how you said they respectfully remove themselves, and how I oftentimes say is safely remove themselves. And yes, like the business is called The Hands-Off CEO. The book is called The Hands-Off CEO. But ultimately, in order for the C, it's not, it's about everybody being more hands-off and removing themselves as bottlenecks so that you have your key people who are exceptionally valuable. They can backfill themselves out of these roles so that the business isn't dependent on any one key person. And unfortunately, the way that most companies address this is say, okay, well, we have this bottleneck. How do we simplify this down so we no longer have this bottleneck? Now, it's a reasonable way of looking at it, and it's not exactly incorrect. But the problem is that most of the time they simplify it down to remove the value out of it, to remove what is actually exceptional about this piece. So I think exiting out of sales is a really key. Is a good example of this, not actually. And I know that. So I'm going to give. I'll just use an example of a CEO who is very hands-on in sales. Is that okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
That may be a situation that some listeners here are experiencing, and it may be something similar that maybe some sales directors are experiencing, where you have, a couple top people who are generating over 80% of the sales, which is probably what you see a lot, Darren. So what it comes down to is that it's understanding what is it actually that clients want to buy. And the problem is that when you're looking at it from the perspective of how do we be able to optimize this, how do we simplify this down, you remove the essence of what clients actually want, right? So you have to be able to break it down and look at it from a bigger picture perspective to say, what is it that we're actually selling? And before we actually started, before we pushed record, Darren, you were talking about how marketing is blaming sales for not selling. Sales is blaming marketing for not generating good enough leads. And sales is blaming operations for not just like onboarding them right and just doing the work, right? So everybody's blaming everybody within this. So we have to have a way to be able to look at the big picture for how everything all connecting. So because we have this convenient way of breaking things into departments, because that's kind of the way that like we can make it simpler for us to look at. But the reality is that there's no separation. It's all the same big interconnected system. And unless you look at it, unless you look at it as an interconnected system with every single piece actually connecting into each other, then you're going to miss it, because it's kind of like saying, you know what, I have a Volvo car here, and you know what, we need a new engine. What's the best engine? Well, BMWs make the best engine, so let's just go ahead and change out the engine and put a BMW engine in a Volvo. It doesn't work, right? It's not interchangeable. So we have to So instead of going and trying to fix and tinker all the things, we need to look at things from a bigger, we need to look at the offerings. What are we actually delivering? And I maybe even bigger than what are we actually delivering? What is the work in the world that we want to be known for? And specifically in our business, we work with B2B services that are generating some kind of transformation. Now, the problem with transformation is it's so flippin' difficult to scale. Because you have key people who are really good at it, but how do you get the rest of the team to do that? So you have to first look at the end and say, what is the ideal transformation we want to create? What does that look like? And then you back into it. Am I going into too much detail here, Darren?
No, keep going. It's all good.
Okay, so all right, so then you have to need to back into it and say, well, what is it? If we want to create this bigger transformation operationally, what are we going to need to do to be able to make that happen? Now, then how do we, and then that's to create the integrity of it. But here's the thing is client prospects don't buy, they don't buy your delivery system. They don't buy your systems and processes. They don't buy your deliverables. They don't give a shit about your deliverables. Sorry, I swear. They don't care, right? They want the outcome. Like if you're like what it, so it's actually looking at why is it that this prospect is here coming to us. What are they actually looking to solve? And I promise you, it's not a website. It's not increasing the number of clicks to your website. It's not even to be able to get a sales team. At the end of the day, they want to be able to grow the company. So how does what we're offering here improve their profits, improve their sales? How does it the big picture of that? And unfortunately, when we're looking at how do we be able to remove like keep people out of the business, we lose sight of the very purpose for what the business is for, because we need to op we need to optimize for that.
It's amazing when you were talking through that. I'm thinking, I'm going pop, 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 because there are, and you would see this in the work you do. There are so many organizations that are so fixated on their own services, their own products, and they believe that is the elixir to all the problems, versus the customers. And you'll see this in the consulting world. The customers, all they want is an outcome. What is the outcome that can be delivered? It's about them. It is not about you. So if we come in leading with, hey, we can provide this and we can do this and all that sort of stuff, the customer's sitting there thinking, so what? How can that, what does that translate to me in terms of the outcome or the problem that I'm trying to solve? And can you solve the problem?
See, you nailed it. And see, that very problem is what's going on is that in their head they are calculating what is the risk or my what's my risk ratio? What is my risk reward ratio? So they're looking at this and saying the degree of risk that they see or the likelihood they're going to get a result compared with the potential value of this. So if you haven't done a very good job of helping them see the real powerful outcome of what, and almost, by the way, most B2B service companies are absolutely terrible at this. And as a result, the client is sitting there, they don't understand what they're actually, they don't see a bigger vision. They don't get it, right? And all they see is risk. So what that means is that you're leaving an enormous amount of money on the table, and you're getting clients that throw spaghetti against the wall and hope that it sticks. Are you guys, do you guys say that expression in Australia? Is that just an American expression? The spaghetti against the wall.
We well, it depends on which part of Australia you talk about. Spaghetti in Australia is a great food. So people were listening to this and saying, why would you throw spaghetti up on the wall where you should be eating it? We tend to use mud, throw mud against the wall and see which it sticks.
I knew you would
But
have some colorful expression
it's
that
all
you did
good. We
that one down.
understand the metaphor. That's fine. Hey, Mandy, with the comment you just made around risk, if because I firmly believe that in a sales role, whether you're in a B2B organization, whether you're a consultant helping an agency or whatever the case might be, our role is to either remove as much of or minimize as much as we can the risk or the perceived risk that the customer thinks they have as part of doing business with you. Now, you mentioned before that there's a lot of organizations that leave money on the table because of their inability to either articulate the risk or give the customer comfort that that risk can be minimized or at least removed. Now, is that, without putting words in your mouth, is that one of the key, I guess, opportunities that you have? Because you mentioned before that there's a lot of organizations that could be charging a lot more, but essentially doing the same work. Does the risk equation come into that? So if we can get better at minimizing, reducing the risk, so the level of comfort that the customer has rises, which means that the value perception rises, which means we should be able to charge more. Is that how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. When we look at the what how a customer or how a potential client will evaluate any service, any investment that they're looking at is based upon two factors, risk and reward. And what you want to be doing is reducing the risk and increasing the reward, right? If you're seeing my hands do this. But the reality is what ends up happening is most of them, the risk seems very high. And the reward feels very low. So you have this tiny little gap to work with. So what that means is that's how much they're willing to pay. And so because it doesn't feel like investing, it feels like gambling. So they're going to throw a little bit of money at it and see how well it works. So then what ends up happening is then you're setting yourself up for these tiny little one-off projects where you have to haul butt to make these projects work. And then those are the ones that your key people get very involved in, where you're working so hard to be able to show a result in too short of a time frame to actually be able to move the needle much. And in that short time frame, what ends up happening is that you end up having to over deliver, and then your client gets used to you over delivering. So you have the cycle of over delivering, and you see how like all the profit just keeps getting drained and drained and drained. So on top of this, they're used to paying very little. So now you're getting they're not investing in the full amount, but you're giving way more. So you're sitting in a situation where you're stuck there over servicing clients, getting underpaid,
Yeah.
and then it eats up your profit margin. It's very difficult to scale that way.
Well, it's very difficult to remain viable that way, I would have thought, because
Oh,
there's so much
totally.
effort you're putting in. And what you're mentioning there is like proof of concepts. And I've seen it happen where so many resources get thrown at a project. Hey, we've got to prove that we've got capability versus saying, hey, we know we've got the capability, right? If the customer likes that, great. If the customer doesn't like that, great. Depends on how badly the customer wants to solve that problem.
Right.
So, because part of it's going to be how strong are we going to be in the offering that we have, that we will stand behind that and we will not. Because I'd like to ask you about the discounting agenda that people have out there, that they're, how do we stand strong with, you know what, we're not going to do a proof of concept that is going to have all of the resource thrown out at them. Which what you've just described is a short-term thing, doesn't necessarily move the needle, but it also sets a precedent of an expectation of a minimum standard of service for any future work, right? Which is like a what's it called?
Right.
Diminishing returns, if you like, from a provider's perspective. How do we deal with that? How do we, because you'll have people listening to this saying, yeah, that's fine. We're in a marketplace that's very competitive. Right now, our organization has a really small share of wallet. We have no option but to go in there and use strategies such as discounting and proof of concepts and stuff like that just to get in the door. Because we reckon when we get in the door, everything's going to be possible. But it doesn't
Yeah.
always work in reality, right?
Right, exactly. And thank you so much for bringing that up, because that kind of brings to my next point. And this is where it's really, I brought it up earlier about being clear on what is the transformation that you want to create. Who do you want to create the transformation for? And I actually like to look at it also as, what's the minimum level of result that you're going to create for a client? And where I would look at is, at minimum, you need to be delivering million-dollar transformations at minimum. And anything less than that, you're not going to, like, there's just not the price point with the margin to be able to pay people to do the work. So the biggest thing is just to up your minimum standard for what's the minimum kind of work that we're going to be doing together, and then look at what is the best. So I want to introduce a concept called vision selling that I created, a vision selling, where we want to sell a bigger vision. But to be able to do that, we need to look at the bigger vision. What is it, actually articulate for ourselves, what are we actually going to be doing? And this is where it comes down to what we call the power of ones. So what is the one client that we want to, and what was the one problem, and what is the one outcome they want? Not deliverable, not solution and outcome. Actually, the quantifiable outcome. And this is not an easy thing to get to. And the great news is most of your competitors won't do this.
Yes.
And they'll probably mock you and point fingers at you, because they're trying to get you to not do it, because they because you will become the company that puts them out of business by doing this. And right?
It's like reverse FOMO.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing, is I actually was a little bit late coming to this conversation, because I was talking to this really fantastic team. I love them. And we just had our first conversation, and their team is just like, you know what? Like, right now, we can't say to our prospects, like, they want to know what we can actually do. If, like, after working with us, they want to know, what are they actually going to quantifiably have? And we
Yes.
want to be able to say that to them, but we don't know how to say that yet. And I'm like, yes. I love that you guys are so bold that you're actually looking this way. And this is not for everyone, right? This is not for the mediocre players that's saying, you know what, we're going to crank the crank. We're going to give you this deliverable. And you know what? I hope you're happy with it. Fingers crossed it works. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Basically, it's the bell curve. And that works great. That worked really well 5 years ago. That worked really well. Actually, it didn't even work that really that well. You could get by. But then, you know what, COVID happened, so you have all these insane pressures on businesses like never before. Now you have inflation out the wazoo. It's quite difficult pressures. Now you have the cost of staffing has gone way up, and now you have AI. You have overseas out, offshoring, all these things have been happening, but they have been exacerbating to the point where if you don't have a competitive advantage, you're going to really have a difficult time being able to charge the price point, to command the price point that the clients are going to be happy to pay that to get the kind of results. So anyway, I just wanted to check in with you. Is this making sense right here?
It is, because what you talk about there is, and I really resonate with the power of one, because there are a lot of organizations, and by the way, there's a lot of coaches and consultants out there that think, you know what, I can do everything for everybody, right? You want that? I can do that, no worries at all. And here's my nickel and dime charge for it. But by focusing in and being really articulate with the value that you bring a certain marketplace and honing in on that, and I'm not necessarily suggesting you have to be the best at it, right? But you have to be known for that. And if you focus on that, the power of one is really powerful. So, and if you focus on that, guess what? You become known for that thing. There's no reason why you can't, within reason, start to leverage a little bit more in terms of broadening your services, but doing it in a managed way.
Exactly. And that's where you start, right? That's where you start, because if you're looking at, hey, we want to be able to scale our sales, like we want to be looking at, well, what kind of sales? Well, you want to have the most profitable sales. So what does the profit sweet spot client look like? And you mentioned you don't have to be the very best. Well, here's the thing is that you become the very best though when you have that focus on results. Because you could be doing very similar work to the next guy, the next company that's providing a similar solution. But here's the thing is if you are optimizing your operations around quantifiable outcomes, you will be getting dramatically better results than the company that is doing this, doing very similar work, but they're giving them a list of KPIs and trying to hide behind the numbers and saying, yeah, they kind of arrange their numbers in like kind of the soup that they can kind of hide behind so that they don't really have to be responsible for actually moving the needle in any quantifiable way.
Which means that as a business providing those services, we have to get really dialed in on what are those quantifiable metrics that we want to become expert in, or at least moving towards expert status in, which will demand a high premium in the marketplace, because it means there's a tangible value that's being delivered,
Love
versus
it.
just trying to be all things to all people. So through that process, I wanted to ask you around the people involved, because I know that there'll be, when I talk to leaders, I ask often a question which to me is really fundamental, but for some it's like, what do you mean? That's just the worst question I've ever heard. Is what's the ultimate, I guess, reason for being a leader? And what I'm trying to grapple with there is, and reveal, is the ultimate reason for being a leader is to get to a point where you've grown other leaders to where you become redundant. And so translate that into the work that you do, and you're talking about the hands-off CEO. How many challenges do you see within the people side, particularly in businesses where maybe a founder has started, they've developed a service or a product, it's like their child that they can't let go? How much of that is a challenge where they don't want to let go because they have to be involved in everything, which through that process often results in them stifling the growth and the potential of their business? How
Yeah,
much of do you
that happens 100% of the time. I mean, I haven't seen a situation where that doesn't happen, except for in cases where the founder of the company just doesn't care at all. And those are companies that have a lot of churn, and I won't touch those with a 100-foot pole. But it happens 100% of the time. But there's two different reasons for that. So we need to look at the two different parts. So there's two parts of it. One part is the system. It's the system around how what needs to be in place here such that I can feel confident with the team is going to be able to do this without me. And a great way to do that is to have a stress test or go on a vacation and leave your laptop at home. I don't recommend doing that without some steps in place first. But
Like
so what I
a long line of credit at your bank.
I mean, there are steps moving towards this direction, right? So there's a system, and then there's a mindset. And so here's the thing is that A lot of people will look at this and say, okay, well, system, and I'll focus on the system. And the problem is that they may even put the systems in place or rotate them around. And they're like, when really what it comes down to is it's actually a missing mindset. Like they are not, that for some reason they are feeling, we call it the Superman syndrome. I talk about that in my book, about how, like, and actually I have to give credit where credit's due. One of our clients, Jamie, came up with this term. He's like, you get the Superman, I'm going in my phone booth and I'm putting on my Superman suit. Like I gotta be the one to save the day, right? And then, so like there's a mindset around like of significance. You get significance, and there's like actually this dopamine hit you get out of like
Yeah.
coming in, saving the day, right? So there is something that you really have to learn how to change your identity around getting significance out of being the doer that fixes these things into something into a higher, more elevated role. And if you
Yep.
don't do that, what will happen is you will continue to keep that identity and continue to break things so that you can fix it, because that will fulfill on your identity.
And often that is an unconscious thing that you just, it's just like a thermostat that you'll keep coming back to that.
Okay, so here's the thing, is it like I have been consulting with companies doing this for almost like 12 years or so, right? And helped a lot of companies do this, and me and my team have done this. Now, the thing is that I've had to go through these same mindset shifts, even though I'm sitting here, sitting in the problem, and realizing, damn it, I'm doing it again, and being blind to it sometimes. And even when I
Yes.
was writing this book, The Hands-Off CEO, there were times when I was sitting here, this book took me about 5 years to write. And like there were times where I was sitting there like typing at the keyboard crying, because I'm like, this is exactly my life right now. And I'm way beyond that now, thankfully. But what I'm saying is like I've had people read this and they're like, I really felt that you got it. And I'm like, oh yeah, I totally understood that. And it was for those for CEOs who have been in that situation, like it's a pretty visceral read, because it like, yep, that's exactly what I'm going through right now. But here's a solution to get out of it. So
Yeah.
anyway, does that I think did we sufficiently cover the mindset piece around that?
Well, absolutely, because it's I think as you rightly say, a lot of founders, CEOs, executives don't spend enough time consciously focusing on mindset. They just do things almost on autopilot. And as you alluded to just then, they often do things like an out of body experience, almost like they just do things and they create situations and sometimes drama, so they can be the superhero that comes in and fixes it because they get the satisfaction from being the go-to person. It's
Right.
the CEO, it's the executive that can see that for what it's worth and say, you know what, I'm actually potentially the inhibitor right now. So it now points to the question of how do I surround myself and how do I attract high quality people who may be different to me, who can take the business forward, who can pick up the ball and run with it. And I don't need to be the superhero every single time. It's the ability to let go. So from your own experience, as you alluded to before, in your own business, how did you, because you would have learned some valuable lessons through that process. What did you learn around mindset from that perspective?
Here's the thing, is that the way you learn mindset is usually looking back, because you can't see it when you're in it, and like you definitely don't want anyone to point it out to you when you're in it. Right? But here's the thing, is what I've learned from a leadership perspective about is that if you look around at your team, the quality of your team, look around and you'll see the quality of yourself as a leader.
Sorry, I'm
Sorry,
laughing
too much.
because no, it's beautiful because I say to people all the time, hey guys, your team is a reflection of you.
It's totally true. Look in the mirror. It's you.
That's
It's
it.
not them. It's you. And because here's the thing, is that first of all, you can have fantastic people on your team, but if you're not growing as a leader, then you're not going to be able to maintain that kind of team. They're going to get very frustrated, and eventually, they're going to leave. And here's the other thing too, is that I want to go back to one of the things that you said about how like as leaders, we're successful when we're actually getting to a point where we're building other leaders underneath us and we're making ourselves redundant. And really the role is as the CEO, as you're, it's not just CEO, but I know there's a number of leaders on here that aren't just CEOs, but your role as a leader is to build the people underneath you to be able to have the skills and the strengths to be able to do their very best work and to be able to unlock in them capabilities and power that they did not know that was even in them. And when you can refocus on that, it's so much fun because then you can see just these absolute powerhouses be able to go in and do things that they never thought was possible from your coaching.
Absolutely. And in that process, what you're creating is an environment of independence where they're thinking for themselves. You've got a set of key principles that you've set for the business or the organization, but you don't have to be there looking over people's shoulders, giving people permission to do things. You've set the parameters and you said, hey, we trust you. Go forth and do what you know is the best for the organization. Think for yourself. Don't come to me because it's like what you said before. Can you go away for 2 weeks holiday and leave your laptop at home and know that your business or the organization will continue to thrive? Or
Yeah.
do you feel as if I can't leave because it's going to be almost abandoning the business? Which, funnily
Right.
enough, in my corporate career, I had a sales general manager say to me one day because I wanted to take the wife and the kids away for a holiday for 2 weeks. And I'd been 9 months in this particular role, 7 days a week, just trying to catch up and establish myself. I said, I need a holiday. And he said, and I said, I'm going to take my family to Queensland, which is north of Australia. I'm leaving my mobile phone at home and I'm leaving my laptop at home. And he looked at me as if I was from another planet. And he said, and I quote, are you saying to me, Darren, that you are going to abandon the business? At that moment, that was the time that I said, you know what? Up until that point, I thought I would like to be like you. And I won't put his name in there, but he was a director. He was very flamboyant. He was very charismatic. I'm thinking, yeah, I'd like to be in a role similar to that. From that day forward, I said, no way. Because what it said to me is, what he was trying to create was an environment where I was pivotal to the success of that environment. And my thought process was, no, I'm a steward of this. I'm a temporary custodian of this group. They have to think for themselves. So when I go away, the ship should continue to sail without me at the wheel.
Absolutely. That is such a crazy perspective because you're also he's setting up a situation where the house of cards crumbles if you decide to go, and especially with sales, like that's like one of the highest turnover positions.
Yeah.
Oh wow. With my team, I think I have to say I feel really proud of the culture we've developed, a very high performance culture, but it's from not from a place of like holding a stick. There's no stick there. It's a like this is what we're building. This is exciting. This is the impact that we're making in the world, and this is how we're helping these people get to be able to generate more wealth in their life and to be able to have their life back and to be able to help so many people and rise to the level of incomes that they can pay their team members and to be able to do such big impact in the world. They want to be part of this. And I had to tell them to take vacations. I'm like, all right, like you got to get out. I'm like, I'm going to call your wife if you don't plan this vacation. Like it's getting to that point, right? And that here's the thing is that it takes something to build that kind of culture, but it's so much more fun to be in an environment like that because it's just flow.
And when you try to attract talent into the organization, and I don't want this to sound woo-woo, but it probably does. When you walk
Go for
into
it.
an
I'm woo-woo on it.
environment, you'll feel an energy. You feel it, you'll get a sensation, and that's your gut instinct or your intuitive faculty saying, there's something about this team, this organization, this company. I can't quite put my finger on it yet, but there's a good feeling here. I think this is where I potentially belong and where I could flourish. Versus you go into others and you think, oh my God, you could literally cut the tension with a knife. This is not a place. This is not a good place. The vibe is not good at all. And that comes from the environment that's been created by the leaders, right?
Right. Well, and
So,
that's our responsibility is to create that environment.
well, it is, right? So when we talk about the hands-off CEO and think about this concept, in order to be able to do that, right? In order to, because at the end of the day, as you rightly said, It's about building viable businesses that are long-term sustainable, that help people build better wealth, better lifestyles, more fulfillment, all the stuff that comes with that, right? All the great stuff that I think if you ask most people on the planet, they would literally die to get, right? Or have access to. The thing is, it's available to most, if not all, organizations if they're prepared to put in the work and have the right focus, such as the right vision, the right mindset, the stuff we've spoken about today. From a CEO perspective or from a leadership perspective, what are some key principles that we need to be mindful of, particularly around attracting talent, from a people perspective, or just some key principles you've seen working right from a culture perspective that doesn't guarantee that we're going to be able to create that environment, but at least starts to move us in the direction where we are no longer, I guess, the center of the entire business, where we can start to take a bit of a step back.
All right. Well, you first of all have to stop making it about you. It's not about you. It has to be much about a much bigger purpose. Are you laughing?
Sorry, I'm just everything you're saying, it's like hallelujah, hallelujah.
Well, here's the thing is that nobody wants to get up in the morning and go to work to be able to pad your pocket to make you more money. All right. That's not, they just don't care about that, right? So you have to have, you just simply cannot scale a company without having a bigger purpose. And one of those bigger purposes is what is the work that we're doing in this world? Are we going to be that mediocre person who's just a mediocre company that just does about the same as everybody else? Are we going to say we're a little bit better? Or are we going to actually take a stand for the kind of impact we want to see in the market by looking at what are all the things that are totally screwed up about your market? And how are you going to go and say, like, take a stand for being the opposite of that? Having the courage to be able to color outside the lines and really take a stand, really taking a stand here. And the reality is you're going to turn some people off. You know, just like, for example, you said that little energy comment there, like when I said that, I'm like, I like you even more now. Now there's somebody who's listening to this and like, oh, that's weird. I don't like this daring guy. Right. But here's the thing is that like the people who love you, right?
That's it.
So what I'm saying is though, but taking a stand for what you're actually, what are you actually a stand for? And then getting everybody excited around that. That's your main core job as the CEO is what it, is getting your whole team rallied around whole vision and a mission and to the point where like they're wanting to wear t-shirts and hats and like just they're so excited for what you're doing, right? That they feel like they are it cult is short culture cult. You're creating a cult, all right?
We're building cults.
I have now also done this. Like I've now repelled some people away from me now too. She's telling me to build a cult in my company. Yes, a cult like following within your team where they're so excited about what you're doing that they're showing up for more reasons than money. So
Ethically, ethically, ethically.
ethically, okay, ethically, we're not really building a real
That's the
cult, okay.
asterisk, ethics.
Totally ethics, right? But that's also part of like you have a stand and you take nothing less than the stand. And then you're creating a company as opposed to just trying to fix whatever's going on right now.
Yeah.
Creating something. So that's how I would approach. I hope I got that question right because I think I forgot some of the pieces of it, but
So the first thing is the big vision. Now, from that, what would you, are there certain qualities based on the work you're doing with organizations, qualities in people that I guess that is more attractive to some of these organizations to enable the CEO or the executives to sort of step back?
right. Yeah, so the and I've learned a few of these things from one of my mentors who scaled like a dozen $100 million plus companies, some of them 400,000, taking them to public, like really successful guy. And one of them is who's saying like a hunger, someone who never quite satisfied. And that is one piece that you're looking for someone who is and someone who likes to learn and they're coachable. So and he used the term coachable coaches. And this is actually how I got him as a mentor because I reached out to him. I was interviewing him for my book, actually. And I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent, but he's
Ah, cool.
like, I resonated. He's like, I was like, why did you take this call? You know, I basically like, why did you take this call? He's like in a completely different league, right? And he's like, well, I could see from you that you are a coachable coach. Like you're someone who listens and like, so you want someone who is coachable and who will be able to coach other people. And but I also look for like if I can't have someone coachable, they're gone. Like they just they're not they're completely not a use of time. I want someone who has who has some values. Like they stand for something, right? And they're not looking for just a paycheck. So really what it comes down to your core values. What are your core values? And then screening for your core values and screening for that coachability and like that hunger and like they want to learn, they want to grow. And that's what's worked for me. And that's what we've seen works with our clients as well. But it takes more than anything though. It takes you as the CEO, the founder, the leaders in the company actually living the values and the mission of the company, which is the hardest part.
It is, particularly when evidence might suggest that there's an easier road to take that might involve some self-preservation or self-protection.
Well, absolutely, especially as you hit these certain separate levels, that really kicks in.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
Because as the company grows, now what's the terminology? I think John Maxwell talks about this. He said the growth of your company is directly in proportion to your growth as an individual, growth as a leader. So
100%.
you cannot grow your company beyond your own personal growth. So, and it stands to reason then that when you're attracting people into the organization, you've got to have people who have ambition, who don't just want to turn up and clock on, clock off and get a paycheck, who have values that are aligned, hopefully, to the organization, but there might be some correlation there in terms of is there a match with the vision? Are they teachable? Do they think for themselves? Can they take proactive action rather than waiting for permission to do things? So all these things, you know,
Sure.
can be translated to a startup organization, but a massive behemoth of an organization that simply wants to grow as well. You've got to have the same sort of principles in place.
Well, and part of this as well also is you being the kind of company that people want to work at, you being the kind of leader that they respect. And that this is actually the hardest part that I found. And the times where I realized that there were breakdowns, the only person I could blame was myself, that I had created that. And that is a hard pill to swallow. And the reality is it takes a little longer than like, you don't see it all at once, but you start seeing it as you're growing and you're getting behind it. And I think that there was a real turning point for me. There was a one point where it has led me to the team that I have now, where there were breakdowns, and I said, like, there was like a never again moment, absolutely never again. And there was what I call a raise the bar conversation that happens, like, this is it, this is where we're this is the standard. And then what happens in a conversation like that is that you can turn people off pretty quick, and then those people will exit themselves out of the company because they realize that's I'm never going to be there, and it's a clear line. You also want to be intentional about those conversations that you have, because those raise the bar conversations, because they will lead to people's exits. So you should be careful about when you're doing it. But it also leads to the space where you can have the very best, incredible kind of people. And when we're talking about top performers, they don't do better. They're not like twice as good. They're not like 50% as good. They're five times as good. So in small companies, you can't afford anything but top performers.
And I would also say that with that, when you're setting the standard, you need to be ruthlessly uncompromising with those standards and maintaining them. So,
Yes.
and the conversation, and it's okay because you said there may be people who, when a standard has been set or when a standard has been reset to take the business to the next level, there may be people who opt out of the company to say, you know what, I'm not quite prepared to get to that because I'm kind of at my threshold anyway, and this is not for me. And that's perfectly okay. But as a CEO, as a senior leader, it's about how do we help them exit that business in a way that's respectful, that they leave with a good taste, right? So that they
Right.
go and we help them find a role somewhere else that might be is more befitting of their skill set and their attitude and where they're at.
Well, and sometimes it doesn't mean that they're even exiting the company. Like, for example, earlier this week, one of our clients shared how they had one of these raise the bar conversations, and one of the people there is just like, "This is just not like this is not where I want to be at all. Like, but I love the company. Can I just come on part time as a freelancer and take over your blog?" And she's like, "Oh my gosh, that would be amazing, right?" So it was a good win-win.
Perfect. So there's, but if you didn't have that conversation, there would have been potentially an undertone of discontent, maybe dissatisfaction, which could lead to culture issues, fracturing the culture,
And
a whole host of things.
it's an environment where your top people can't thrive, so your top people will leave, and or they'll stay and they'll check out, and so you'll have these really high pay people on your team who have checked out, versus the opposite of, like, we're doing our team planning right now, our quarterly planning right now. We're finishing on, and like we've got these heated debates sometimes where, like, our operations leader is like, "No, this is what we need to do," and like our sales director is just like, "No, we need to look at it this way," and like, but and it's all friendly, but like it's heated, and that means because they're so engaged, right? And so we all have our own perspectives, but that takes fostering some trust and a trusted environment to be able to actually give pushback, and this is another key thing. So many leaders, like, they are afraid of being questioned, so they do not create a space where there's any vulnerability. They don't create a space where there is, like, where they can be questioned. So then what ends up happening is they have a bunch of order takers. "Yes, ma'am, I'll do that. Yes, sir. Yes, sir." They check off the boxes.
And in the process, the leader feels, "Oh, I'm such a fantastic leader. Look at all these people just doing the things that I've asked them to do. They're coming to me for permission. I feel fantastic with that." Versus, you know what?
And more often I hear it too. They're like, why can't they just think for themselves? Why do I like I often see the martyry thing, and like, oh, I've totally done it too. So I'm not like, no judgment anyone here. But you've just been like, why can't they just think for themselves? Because you're doing all the thinking for them. You trained, you created a situation of trained dependence. Like, you're ringing the bell.
Well, and I'm sort of chuckling to that because my first 3 months of my sales leadership career, I did exactly that. I actually, and I created an environment of codependency where my team were dependent on me to solve problems, and in a really warped way, I was dependent on them to come to me with problems so I could solve them. And it didn't serve either of us very well at all.
Here's a fun mantra for you. Bring solutions, not problems.
That's it. And start thinking for yourself. You don't need me to solve the problem. And what I started to do when they were coming, I started to sort of exit the room, exit my office. I started to spend less time at my desk so they had to think for themselves because I wasn't there to solve them for
Very, very wise. Very wise,
them.
Darren.
Hey man, this has been a phenomenal conversation. There's lots of principles that you've covered, so greatly appreciate that. If there was one overriding last sort of key message for people listening to this right now, whether they are a CEO grappling with trying to grow their business, whether they're in a business that they still have responsibility for growth, but they're trying to get to the next level, is there one last piece of advice that we could leave people with before we close off?
Yeah, definitely. And this is where to start, is to focus on impact. Focus on what's the impact that you want to make in the market, and use that as your guiding star to be able to get your prospects excited around buying services from you for top dollar, for longer engagements, because they can see a much bigger vision, a much bigger vision for how they can work with you. And that will rally your team around a much more exciting prospect of, like, the work that they're doing. They know that the work that they're doing matters, right? And you build a business around impact, and you scale impact rather than deliverables. And for those people who want to look at, like, what are the steps to do that? How do you actually do that? So I wrote the book, The Hands-Off CEO, and it's how to be able to profitably scale. Specifically, a consulting service-based company. So, And I have a really amazing book summary of that if that you can download for free. There's a checklist there. If you go to handsoffco.com/checklist, handsoffco.com/checklist, then you can go and download that scalability checklist and the summary. And there's a link to buy the book there too if you want.
Cool, love it. Which kind of answered my next question is, where can people connect with you, Mandy?
I'm sorry, I jumped the gun. I
Well,
jumped the gun.
but see, as a podcast, you know what's coming anyway, right? So that's the next thing. So,
Rather efficient.
handsoffceo.com/checklist to get the book summary. I'm
Yeah.
assuming they can also go to handsoffceo.com to check out more information about what you do, but
Absolutely.
also can people connect with you on LinkedIn, for example, as well?
Yes. And how you spell my name is Mandy, Mandi, and then Ellefson, Ellefson, kind of a mouthful. But search me up. Hands Off CEO is probably easier to find
Perfect. Awesome. Hey,
them.
Mandy, greatly appreciate you being on the podcast. I'm glad we're able to organize this. It's been a as you cough towards the end of this call, I know it's the end of the day. You've probably been doing a lot of talking today,
I have a little
yeah?
bit.
Well, it must be close to what, 10 past 5 p.m.
Got it.
So
Yeah, you're pretty smart.
it's either time for a lemonade, a water, a coffee, or maybe, I don't know, a Pinot Grigio or a Sauvignon Blanc or something.
Yeah, definitely. I'll have some water and maybe some lemonade. That sounds good.
Awesome.
But
Awesome.
yeah, thanks so
Hey,
much for having me there.
it's been a fabulous conversation, and thanks for being a guest on the Exceptional Sales Leader podcast, Mandy. It's been awesome. Thank you for listening to the Exceptional Sales Leader podcast. I trust the information in this episode has been helpful in your journey towards becoming exceptional. And remember, please take the time to rate the show, subscribe to the show so other people can find it. But also, if I can help you, jump on my calendar, go to leadwithdarren.com, and let's have a conversation about how I can help you along your journey to being exceptional.